Thank you very much for the introduction. Today, I'm not giving the usual what's up at Vox Populi talk, but speaking a bit about powered enterprise upgrades in very odd or fucked up environments, however you would like to call it. You already maybe saw this picture in my Ignite talk. I'm in the Puppet ecosystem. Yes?
That's 10 years now, not 8.
Oh, this
15 to today is 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Anniversary, basically. Yes. I'm active in the community since it all started, basically. And I'm doing consulting and training and other related stuff in the Puppet ecosystem. So if you're not scared after this talk and you need some help, just let us know. Before we dive into all the PE madness, who of you knows what Bolt is and how it roughly works? Awesome. So we can probably skip some of those slides. A very, very brief introduction. What is Bolt? It has a concept of tasks and plans. What's a task? You have a central system, and from the system, you can SSH to any Linux host or use WinRAM for any Windows systems and execute some stuff there, all triggered via a CLI. How does a very, very stupid, simple, bold task look like? You always have a metadata JSON file, as you maybe know it from a Puppet module. This is the stuff on top. It describes what a task does. So you can give it a description, if it supports a --- noop flag or not. And you can pass parameters into a task. And at the end, you can see very, very short bash script. If some of those fonts are too small for you, the slides are also linked in the schedule if you want to look in parallel on your laptop or smartphone. Yes, that's basically a task, very, very simple. You can always provide JSON to a task, and Bolt does some magic to also return JSON from the task. And that makes it very easy to run multiple tasks after each other and basically concatenate different tasks and build your automation around this or your orchestration engine. Now, what's a Bolt plan? This looks very familiar to a Puppet class. We do not start with the class keyword at the beginning, but with the plan keyword. Afterwards, we have our round brackets for some parameters. We can document everything with Puppet strings. And afterwards, we can call most of the Puppet functions. There are a lot of Bolt-specific functions, like the out message, which just writes some text to standard out. And we have the nice ability to call different tasks from a plan or also other plans from an existing plan. And so build very, very complex orchestration. I think Bolt is quite underrated. It perfectly fits into the Puppet ecosystem and provides a lot of orchestration and a workflow engine, which just pairs perfectly with Puppet. Many people are using Ansible for this part and use Ansible with Puppet together. Most of those people just do not know that Bolt exists, which is a bit sad. Pairforce back in the days did a lot of marketing for Bolt, but that stopped some years ago. And maybe this will kick up in the future again. Now coming to Puppet Enterprise. Who of you used Puppet Enterprise? One third of the room, maybe? Okay. Who of you did major upgrades for the Puppet Enterprise infrastructure? Also, okay, a third of the room. There are very, very different setups on how your PE infrastructure can look like. This is a very, very simple one. You have a primary server, which is marked here in the middle. There are different services running on a primary. Usually you have the normal Puppet server, as you know it from the open source world, which compiles all your catalogs. There is a PuppetDB running for PuppetDB stuff, the Postgres service, and a bit more. Two components that are specific for Puppet Enterprise is the orchestrator, which is an API that you can use to also start those bold tasks and bold plans. So in the open source world, we just have the simple bold, which is a CLI tool. In Puppet Enterprise, people build the orchestrator around it, which provides us an API. And there is another service running on the primary, which is called the PE console. It's a web interface. Why a web interface is called console, I don't know. But via this console, you also have the ability as a usual sysadmin to start and stop different tasks and plans and look at the logs that those provided. So you do not have to use the API. You can also click in a web interface if you're interested about it. Another difference between the open source implementation and the enterprise implementation. In enterprise, every server that you have does not only run the Puppet agent, but also the PXP agent that Nick mentioned in his previous talk. The PXP agent basically connects to the orchestrator, and you can push jobs through this WebSocket connection to the PXP agent. So there is a dedicated daemon running on every system to receive jobs and execute those jobs, and you do not have to rely on SSH. Some people like that, other not, but it's available and it works quite well. There are some subtle differences between bold plans, the open source implementation, and plans in PE or Puppet plans, or however they are called in the enterprise ecosystem. I would say that bold has more functions available. Some of those simply do not exist in the enterprise ecosystem. Some of those functions are missing because of the implementation of the PXP agent. For some functions, it's not really clear to me why they are missing. Also, again, Puppet Enterprise, I think, is quite expensive, so it's always hard to explain to a customer why the expensive enterprise software has less features than the open source implementation, but, well, yeah. So that was a very, very brief introduction into what is bold and what kind of APIs do we have available. Please keep all of that in the back of your head. We will rely on it later. Let's start digging into PE and my definition of a very highly restricted environment. Who of you were in the other room and attended the talk from Martin Alfke about scaling Puppet servers? Perfect, that's roughly half of the room. So this is maybe a follow-up talk for this. Let's imagine you run a data center, or maybe multiple data centers. And for weird reasons, you have a shitload of laws that you have to follow and many, many restrictions about the data that you handle. Assume you handle something like credit card information and healthcare data and some kind of government secrets. Like the worst type of data that exists is all in your data center, handled by different services. Now, you do not run a single service, but in this environment, we have 3,000 roughly different services all doing something. A few of those services might process credit card information for some billing stuff, as I mentioned earlier. some other services might deal with very, very critical healthcare information. The services are not allowed to speak to each other. All of those services are independent from each other, and in fact, they're not allowed to talk, and you have to put in place many, many firewall rules and whatnot. Just by accident, someone threw all of those services into a single data center, and you have to take care of them somehow. And each service is a group of virtual machines. Sometimes that's a simple front-end server and a back-end server and maybe a database. Sometimes it's like 50 virtual machines that spin up their own HashiCorp Nomad cluster. Sometimes we have 20 machines that spin up a Kubernetes cluster. It's a wild mix. And each service is managed by Puppet. And the design was, since the services are not allowed to talk to each other, every service gets their own Puppet server. So if I say we have 3,000 different services, this also means that we have 3,000 Puppet servers. And since this is a Puppet Enterprise installation, we have 3,000 independent primaries. They are not allowed to talk to each other. All of them are independent. How does this look? Roughly like this, just way bigger. To manage all of those dependencies and all of this code, every service has their own control repository. All control repositories, for whatever reason, are stored in the same GitLab, and all modules are also mirrored into this single instance. I do not know why the GitLab is shared across all services. This was all decided way before I joined the project, but that's how it is. And those 3,000 independent PE primaries are all speaking to this specific GitLab instance, and each primary has something like 5 to 40 Puppet agents connected to it, something like this. So that's just to give you some numbers. I already mentioned there are a few security constraints. It's not allowed anymore to SSH into any of those virtual machines. In the past, that was possible. And me, as the person that has to work with the Puppet Enterprise and maintain this somehow, I do not know what a service does. I do not know if in the past SSH access was enabled and someone modified their services somehow. I only know with how many virtual machines a service was initially provisioned and what the initial Puppet Enterprise version was. Maybe someone did a downgrade by hand, maybe someone did a reinstallation, an upgrade, maybe someone had some paranoia and added a replica node, and it isn't a standalone primary anymore. I do not know. As I said, SSH not available, but we have access to the different PE APIs. So the Orchestrator API is available for me, which enables me to start different kinds of tasks and plans. And there's another API call, which in theory allows you to do code deployments, which basically runs R10K in a very obscure way. Is it allowed to do code deployments via an API? No, because there are some architects that said they want immutable services, why they use some virtual machines that are spun up by an orchestration and not containers, I do not know. I think some of their decisions do not make much sense, but here we are. And to make it a bit worse, of course, none of those systems have direct access to the internet, and even using some kind of proxy isn't really available, except for the GitLab that can somehow mirror Puppet modules from the internet, but that's about it. All the different primaries and the whole services do not have access to the internet. So my task when I joined the project, all those roughly 3,000 primaries, and I really should have picked a different number because that's very hard to pronounce. So all those 3,000 primaries were already in place, some of them with PE 2019, which is the equivalent to Puppet 6, some of them with PE 2021, and all instances have to be upgraded to PE 2023. All of this happened last summer. Now PE 2025 would be the newest release, but that wasn't available back then. And again, somehow SSH not allowed. That was a requirement. Also, the installation has to be fully automated. And if you worked with Puppet Enterprise, you know that there is some kind of installer that usually demands some input and is interactive. And that's kind of obvious, but yeah, please don't break shit. Was also a requirement. There is a public Slack. Who of you is in the public Puppet community Slack? Not all of you. What about the rest? You're probably sleeping, okay. But please join the Slack or the Vox Populi IRC channel, a great place to hang out and chat about very odd things that you have to do with Puppet. For example, upgrading Puppet Enterprise without SSH access. I mentioned it on the Slack. And afterwards, someone from Perforce reached out to the company I'm working for, and they said, hey, that sounds quite interesting. Maybe we can work together. And because we knew that if I have to implement this, I probably have to propose some pull requests, or I have a lot of questions about Puppet Enterprise, and to make the customer happy and to implement the upgrade quite quickly, it would help to have a direct contact at Perforce that we could talk to. And Perforce recommended this. They approached us. And their idea was that I make the majority of the work, but they can help. And in the end, we can publish all the upgrade scripts that we might write as an open source solution. Perforce can write a white paper. Everybody's happy. And then Perforce just stopped responding to emails. I do not know what happened. I pinged them multiple times via email, on Slack, on IRC, in person, in different events. I'm working for BetaDots. We are a certified Perforce partner. We have a contact person. Even the person didn't know what happened. So I don't know. Here I am. We implemented all of this on our own. And all of this stuff is still open source, and you can check that out at the end. So coming back to upgrading Puppet Enterprise, you all know Puppet highly automation software. How are you supposed to upgrade Puppet Enterprise? So there's a tarball, and you have to download it and just run the bash script in the tarball, which is really challenging to automate. In the tarball, so first of all, the tarball is platform specific and Puppet version specific. In this example, for an Enterprise Linux host, it contains a YUM repository with some RPMs, and the bash script basically installs the RPMs from the local repository. Some of those RPMs contain some Puppet modules, and the installer installs the RPMs and afterwards runs Puppet apply. It works, but as I said earlier, when you do not have direct SSH access to a system and you cannot easily download a tar file or automate it, you run into some challenges. Sadly, the license for Puppet Enterprise does not allow us to tear the tarball apart and just use the RPMs. We are not allowed to put those RPMs on a local YAML mirror, for example. This would have made the whole upgrade process way, way easier. Not allowed. Also, the Puppet modules that are specific for Puppet Enterprise and in those RPMs also have a very strict license, and we were not allowed to put those modules into our local GitLab. Again, that would have helped, but not allowed. Luckily, there are some alternatives. Who of you heard about PEADM? About half of the room. Okay, who of you used it successfully? Almost the same people, okay. with pain but successfully, yes. So now there is, since, I don't know, a year, two, three, something like that, there is a second installation option, which is called PIM, the Puppet Installation Manager, which in turn is a wrapper around Bolt and the PEADM module from Puppet Labs. What is PEADM? It's a collection of tasks and plans to install a Puppet Enterprise environment or run the upgrade, which is basically what I have to do. Or you can also modify your existing installations, like adding a dedicated replica node, more compilers, removing compilers, stuff like this is supported, and that works quite well. What kind of magic does PEADM use? It's still just a wrapper around this very, very big tarball at the end. But it has a lot of safeguards and makes it a bit easier to automate. And it's working since, or it has support for PE 2019, which is the oldest version that I have to support. So that sounds quite easy. So let's just assume we have just the PE installer on our system. As mentioned, we cannot execute it because I have no easy way to just SSH to my primary and just run the installer. That does not work. But there's an orchestrator. The orchestrator has an API to start plans. PEADM ships some plans to do the upgrade. So in theory, we were very naive. Can the orchestrator start the PEADM upgrade? No. Which makes sense. During the upgrade, you have to restart the orchestrator. So you would basically kill your upgrade in the middle of the upgrade. Bad idea. So there's a reason it's not working. And this would have been the chain that I had in mind. That's not working. Keep it in mind. It will get way, way longer. There are more services available that provide different tasks and plans for Bolt. One of them is the service module from Perforce. A very, very simple task. It enables you to start a systemd service, stop it, check if it's running. So a very, very stupid idea that we had. We could write a systemd unit with type exec that codes Bolt. Why type exec? If you start the systemd unit, it will spawn the provided command in the background. And this is how such a simple unit could look like. You can provide some users in the group, the exec start parameter, and then you can run something like systemttl start PEADM at blah, 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 and blah, 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 in this case, would be the name of the plan that Bolt will execute. So this is a template service unit. You might have seen this. It's a systemd unit with an at. Yes. So why didn't I go with a one-shot service? The issue, I think, with one-shot, if you do something like systemttl start one-shot unit, your shell is frozen until the command is completed. It won't run in the background. And in turn, if I would start such a service via Bolt, Bolt would wait until the command is succeeded. So that's not working. That's why we had to use the type exec. I was marking some text with my mouse on my monitor, and I just noticed you do not see my mouse. Very, very smart. Okay. So who of you have seen systemd units with such an at in its name? Half the room. Okay, so if you're not familiar, it's a nice way to pass some parameters to systemd units, as you can see here. So the actual unit just contains the at name, and everything else that's provided after the at is passed as a parameter, and I can use this in my systemd unit file. Which is basically this command bolt plan run percent i. So now we are one step further. We have a simple systemd unit that can start bolt, that can start plans, and the orchestrator via a task can start the systemd unit. And all of this sounded okay in my head until we noticed that Puppet Enterprise by default does not ship Bolt, which would have been nice. We requested this almost a year ago, and not a single person from Perforce responded to our feature request. So Vox Populi, or I just switched my head from PE consultant to Vox Populi engineer, and Vox Populi now has a Puppet module that can install Bolt for you, and also has the nice Puppet Enterprise flag to provide the systemd unit that you saw earlier. And with this, our chain gets a bit longer, and now random system administrators can call the Puppet Enterprise orchestrator API. This will use the service task to start the systemd unit, which will start Bolt, which can start PEADM, which will trigger the big tarball. Sounds interesting and sketchy. By magic, it works. Sorry?
But does it break things?
So in our development environment, it worked surprisingly well until we tried it in a customer environment. Then we noticed some very, very odd issues that I will dive into now. For example, PEADM makes some assumptions about the state of your environment. It basically assumes that your Puppet Enterprise installation is healthy. Sometimes that's the case, sometimes not. And to be fair, it's quite hard to figure out in a generic way if your environment is healthy or not. Because often healthy is defined by very company-specific terms that you need to implement first. But it's quite easy. I mean, we can just write another bolt plan that we start that does some health checking. And now the chain just got a bit longer. So until bolt, it's still the same. Bolt now just calls our wrapper plan that can do some health checking, and afterwards we can trigger PEADM, and yeah, that works quite good. before you can do an actual PEADM upgrade, PEADM needs to know how the environment looks like. It does that by checking the TLS certificate. In the certificate are some information about your PE infrastructure. For example, is this a primary? Do you have a standalone Postgres? Do you have some compilers? If you installed your environment by hand or not with PEADM, those information are missing. And there is another plan that you just have to call before the upgrade. That's the convert one. It will replace all the TLS certificates on your primary and on your compilers. So that's nothing that you should run on a Friday afternoon. Maybe if you are on vacation the next days because your colleagues might hate you. So this has some potential to break your whole infrastructure because, as I said, it will replace some certificates. To their own credit, I did not run into any issues in my tests. The convert worked well, but as I said, use it with caution. It could break some of your stuff. So we figured out we need to do some health checks to check if all the agents got a working catalog in the past, that they did not use use cached catalog, that they submitted a report without issues, that all the puppet agents in one service are at the same version. And all of this has to be handled in our wrapper plan, and our wrapper plan somehow needs to be deployed on the system. To do this, there is a code deployment API. Usually people are not allowed to do some code deployments for code that could modify an existing service. We had a lot of argumentation with the architects and could convince them that the no deployment rule is stupid. And that basically enabled us to do code deployments to get our own stuff on the system. And to do this with minimal impact, we configured multiple control repositories. Who of you did this in the past on their own infrastructure? One person? Really? Interesting. Okay. Hidden gem, if you're using R10K in open source or Code Manager in Puppet Enterprise, you have the option to use multiple control repositories if you ever have the desire to do so. And there are, of course, different configuration options available. Where's my mouse? Many people know this hierarchy, which you can use to configure a single control repository. There is another option available where you can provide a hash to one or multiple control repositories. Very easy. Now, you will run into issues if you use both options to configure repositories. Of course, in my customer environment, they were using the legacy or old style, which only allows a single control repo, and we had to update their stuff to switch to the newer syntax. Another thing that you should keep in mind or have to keep in mind when you start the Puppet Enterprise installer, it can take a configuration file, so it's not interactive anymore. The config file is basically a list of hierarchies, and this information will be written into the PE console, which is not a console but a web UI. And this web UI also acts as a Hira backend and as a ENC. So this means that in our case, we had to clean up the pe.conf because it contained the old key, and we also had to clean up the PE console, which contained the old data. And somehow we had to configure the new repository as well. And to make it even worse, there is a hidden cron job that dumps the data from the PE console and writes it into another config file that's used in parallel with the pe.conf sometimes. For example, when you do a Puppet Enterprise upgrade, but not during normal Puppet agent runs. And none of this is properly documented, so you just need to try and error for weeks and cry a lot. So, which format is very common in the Puppet ecosystem? YAML. Which format was chosen for the PEconf and the user data? HOCON. Now, does Puppet have a function to write and parse HOCON files? No. Would be too easy. HOCON is basically JSON with the option to have comments in your file. So there is some benefit of using HOCON instead of pure JSON or YAML. But again, it would have been helpful if Puppet Core or StandardLib would have functions to write HOCON to files. It only has this for YAML and JSON. To make it worse, of course, no Puppet agent that we have is running in their production environment, but in some weird branch name, and every team that maintains a service has a different schema for their branch names, which in general is totally fine, until you try to use the PE console to start some tasks and plans, which had some bugs, and you were not able to use the console, which is a web UI, properly when you do not have a production environment deployed on your system, which also took us some time to figure out. Also, PEADM assumes that there is a production branch present on your primary. You do not have to use it, but PEADM assumes it's there. Also, that's another requirement that's not documented anywhere. We reported this as a bug in July last year, and the PEADM upgrade will abort if there is no production environment deployed. So this was a major blocker for this very, very big Puppet Enterprise customer. From Perforce or Puppet, nobody responded, so we were working on our own fix and provided one in August. This is still not released. We had some engineers look into the code, and we got some feedback back in July. But since September, again, none of those people respond anymore. I do not know what happened. So in PEADM upstream, the bug is still open. And yeah, the issue is ignored. Another issue that we run into, in this case, that's properly documented on the Puppet website. If your agent on the primary is not running in the production environment, you have to configure this in your Puppet Enterprise. There are two hierarchies where you need to set this. The customer didn't do this. That was their own fault. They didn't read the documentation. Oh yes, so sometimes the Puppet agent starts. It starts in the production environment. The primary or the ENC tells it there is no production environment or it's not the correct environment, and the agent just starts again in the correct environment. We had those issues a few times. How the Puppet agent determines its correct environment changed a bit between Puppet versions. So it's best if you do not use the production environment to write the used environment into the puppet.conf file. There are many, many options available. This is a very simple example with a ini setting resource. You can also use the puppet agent module or If you're not interested in using Perforce owned modules, the Foreman people also have a module to manage the whole Puppet config.
Is configured in the ini file to run against an environment that then does not exist anymore. It silently defaults to production, but it still says I'm running in this environment.
Interesting.
So it's then saying, hey, I'm applying this environment, but it doesn't exist anymore, it just runs production.
Okay, so if an environment does not exist, you might get wrong reports. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Okay, and those are the additional health checks that I had in mind and mentioned earlier. There is a module, PE status check, which has some sanity checks that you can use. And we thought, hey, well, they look awesome. Let's just include those plans that are available and extend them a bit, which is what we did. And we provided the patches that we made upstream. The first patches were reviewed very, very quickly, which was great. And now we have more pull requests stacking up. And it's nobody, again, responds to our pull requests. And it's even unclear who is actually maintaining this repository. I don't know. Maybe Perforce doesn't like me anymore, or maybe they never liked me. That's also fine. But it's very hard to work together with them. Ghosting. Yes. So I provided you some lists of issues that we run into and some health checks that people should do. Most of the code does not fit properly on slides, but a very, very simple example. Where's my mouse again? This is one of the plans that we wrote. In the beginning, it calls a lot of health checks that I described earlier that do all the checks for the Puppet version and the catalog, and that the environment is configured properly, and that the hierarchies exist in the wrong that they do not exist in the wrong places, and that the correct keys exist in the correct places. And if everything is fine, we will do a Puppet run. There is a chance that another Puppet run is already active. So if we run into some failures, we can just try another Puppet run. And this is a very, very simple example of the health check that we wrote. And afterwards, people can do the PADM upgrade. So we now have a open source repository available with all the plans that cover all the health checks that I explained earlier that are required. And we have wrapper plans available for the convert process. So before you do the PADM convert, we do some health checks. Again, for the upgrade, we also do the same health checks again. And we have some more wrapper plans available that do health checks, the convert, and the upgrade to the latest PE 2021 version and to the latest PE 2023 version. All of this is available under a GPL license in our Git repository, and I think we are coming to an end. Configure. Yes. So if someone is interested in testing this on their own infrastructure, the same nodes are also in the README of the Git repository. It's quite simple to configure this test control repo with all the plans and get it up and running in your own test environment. And finally, we can come to a conclusion. We talked to Perforce, and this is not a recommended upgrade way for your Puppet Enterprise infrastructure. Does it work in our use case? Yes, that's totally fine. Will it work for your situation? Maybe, probably, hopefully, I don't know. But I think this is a very, very good starting point. So if you are in a fucked up environment or in a restricted, equal words, or air-gapped, genau, that's the management term. Maybe the repository provides some insights for you or some help. And with that, I'm coming to an end. Thank you for your attention. Are there any questions? Alex?
Will your talk next year be on migrating from PE to Foreman?
Will my talk next year be migrating PE to Foreman? We have some customers that are interested, and we will do some migrations. Yeah, probably that's worth a talk, absolutely. Yes?
The time to develop all this, figuring out all the bugs and such, and doing the exact same thing for 3,000 separate control endpoints?
Yeah.
How long was this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How much time did it pass between going to the client, say, hi, I'm going to do this for you, and getting here?
Okay, so what was the timeline? Good point, I should have added that to the slides. We started at the customer in February and we had a working proof of concept in September. And I'm only part-time at the customer and it took us a lot of time to try to talk to Perforce, get some information until Perforce didn't respond anymore, stuff like this. The pure development time was 3 weeks, roughly. And they started the upgrade on services in October, and that's still ongoing, but it's working for the customer. Yes. Yes. Nick?
I don't know if it helps you at all, but there's actually a stealth bolt installed within PE.
Yes, so the note was that there is a stealth bolt available. I'm aware, but the issue is that there's a lot of patch planning on and automated patching in some environments, and people assume that if they are checking for the Bolt RPM and they want to ensure that Bolt is used via the RPM so it's updated on a regular basis. Yeah, and that's not the case in PE by default. Yeah. Any other questions?
Actually, yes. I looked at it. You could use a one-shot service and then use dash dash no block. Then
oh.
CDL immediately okay. Returns your shell.
Okay. So interesting note. I could have used a one-shot as well. What was the option? No block.
Dash dash no dash block.
No block. Okay. Dash dash no dash. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, maybe we can migrate this to a one-shot.
Yeah,
it maybe makes sense. Yes? Yeah, I would need to check how the service task works, but maybe that's an option. Yes?
Did you create basically add a branch to all of those control records with points?
Yes.
Deploy that as an environment.
So we provide a minimal amount of patches to the existing control repositories, but all the plans that we start with, the orchestrator, were deployed from our patching upgrade control repository. That's why we added the second control repository. Yeah, okay. I think that's it and time's up. So thank you very much.